U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to Friday afternoon. Heck, let's call it the weekend. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline Studio on the Wintrust Business Lunch this beautiful Friday afternoon. Nice weekend ahead as well. Coming up on the program, as I said at the outset, we'll go to Maine, where they're in the process of banning styrofoam in restaurants. Also, we'll talk to the folks at McDonald's about their partnership now with ARP. They are trying to find workers. You know, the jobs report came out today. A stunning, 263,000 jobs created. The unemployment rate at 3.6. A lot of employers are wanting for workers, and McDonald's is looking to senior citizens, or seniors at any way, and they're partnering with ARP to fulfill their worker needs. We'll talk about that coming up after the headlines at the bottom. But right now, Andrea Haines is in the studio from the Chicago Tribune. Andrea, I'm very excited. Last week, they opened up the Farmer's Fridge down in the lobby of this building where I can go. It's a vending machine now where I can get a fresh salad. I haven't yet. But some great-looking food. Farmer's Fridge is just going gangbusters.
It is. It's based in Chicago. It is expanding big time. And I noticed when I walked in today, actually,
yeah.
I came in via the Pedway and noticed the new machine you have downstairs. So you will have to check it out. So they basically offer salads in vending machines. They do more than that, but that gives you the general idea of what they're doing.
And I like that their CEO says, we're basically a logistics company because we're about getting fresh produce in, placing it in these vending machines, and having it be sold in a timely manner so that they don't lose their product.
Exactly. So they do salads in basically mason jars, and they are viewing it and trying to be very smart about the technology piece of it, not just thinking of themselves as a food service kind of situation, but being very smart about the amount of product they're putting out
right there,
what they do with it so it doesn't go bad or go to waste, and just accurately assessing where machines can go, what's enough to do to make money, and they've gotten some big investments.
And the news is they've moved, right? They've had to expand into the south side?
They are. So they had a kitchen in the West Loop that they had been using, as a startup, but now they have this really big kitchen that's going to allow them to go from producing 1 million meals a year to tens of millions
that's amazing.
Meals a year.
And
it's on South Cicero Avenue in Chicago.
And so the CEO, again, in the piece, talks about how, where they would place these vending machines. And they said at first they had to place them where there were, 20,000 people within the immediate area, and now it's down to 1,000?
Yeah, and that's how they kind of calculate how they can be profitable, right? Like, how many people do you need walking by in order to make enough to make the machine pay for itself?
Do you know why the numbers dropped? Is it because of their reputation or because of their improvement in logistics?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. They're really focusing on this logistics issue, and now they're expanding across the Midwest. They're in Chicago and Milwaukee right now with 275 kiosks. They've also gone into Indianapolis just now, and it was kind of fun. I went and read some of the stories about Indianapolis, where it's a newer thing,
right?
To have the salad and vending machines, and people seem excited about it. It's healthy food on the go, which is, we need that.
And I haven't looked at it very carefully. It's limited because they can't carry everything that they make. They have to, which I think is also fascinating, where they will bring things in and try to figure out what's going to sell at what vending machine.
They did. They said they tested a hummus, for example, that wasn't super popular, and they decided maybe it's just too common. It's something people can easily bring from home. So they tend to have more interesting, like an Asian chopped salad. They have a cauliflower buffalo salad, and they said some of their newer items are now accounting for half of their new growth. So they seem to be hitting the right mark.
And speaking of growth, they want to really grow super fast, right? They want to get into a lot of markets within the next year or so.
They do. They've gotten tens of millions of dollars in investment, and they're really on path to grow big.
All right, so Farmer's Fridge, stop by, get a mason jar filled with vegetables, and they take the jars back, right? It's a vending machine. You literally get a salad in a jar, go put it in your bowl or eat it out of the jar, and when you're done, there's a receptacle where you can return it. There's no deposit or anything like that. It's just sort of based on goodwill.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about how do we call it? Plant-based meat products. I'm always careful because Orion is listening, and he rightfully doesn't like things to be called like soy milk or almond milk, but this is meat-like products.
Yes, we won't call it milk or meat we'll try not to call it milk or meat.
Except
although they do
the
call
companies.
It vegan, quote, meat in quotes.
Right.
It's a vegan protein product.
So the name of the company we're talking about today is Beyond Meat, right? And they're talking about a public, they're going to go public.
They did. They just went public this week, and they had massive pop in their price. So their market cap is already at approximately $4 billion, which is pretty huge. It's definitely more than they were expecting.
They're losing money, right?
Like all the tech companies we love, yeah. Right? They hit the market, they do great, but they're actually not making money yet. They have not yet made a profit, and they've got some big competitors. Like we've heard of the Impossible Burger, which is working with Burger King and some other places.
The Impossible Whopper, right? It's going to be nationwide.
The Impossible Whopper's coming, but Beyond Meat has also been popular both in restaurants, and you can buy the Beyond Burger in stores, including Whole Foods, and it's definitely, you know, people have heard of it. It's getting more and more, it's kind of in the common vernacular, and people will buy it even if they also eat meat.
Well, I was going to say two things. First of all, the sales of plant-based meats jumped 42% between March of 2016 and this March. 42%, that's amazing. But you refer to to people who eat it. Beyond Meat said they did a study at Kroger, and I'm just reading from your story, so you know this, but they did a study of their Kroger shoppers, and those who bought Beyond Meat, 93% of them also bought some sort of meat product. So it's not just vegetarians who are eating this.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, because if you think of only vegans or only vegetarians, that's a smaller market still. But there are people who might eat a burger once in a while, a real beef burger, but they want alternatives and they are willing to replace meat in certain meals every week, or, you know, it can really help, I think, lessen the reliance on cows to provide that burger experience.
But, you know, I think our first reaction is that this would be more healthy, and it's not necessarily, right? There's a lot more sodium in these Beyond Meat products, excuse me, and a lot more calories. I mean, there's more calories in a fake burger than in a real burger.
That's true. I think it's always hard to tell with health issues, right? Because what is one person needs to control, right. Another person may need to control something else, right? Someone might be looking at sodium versus carbs versus how much protein versus whatever. But that's true. It's not on some of those measures better. It's also more expensive.
So we'll just have to get Beyond Meat in a farmer's fridge, and we'll be all set.
We'll be all set.
Andrea Haines, read more at ChicagoTribune.com. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. Coming up later in the program, we will go to McDonald's corporate headquarters just across town here and talk about their efforts to hire seniors now to work at the stores, which I think is a repeat of what they used to do, or maybe it's just a reinforcement of what they've always been doing, but a new coordination with ARP to try to find workers for this summer. He's not a member of ARP yet, but Tom Gimbel is the CEO. Or are you? I guess you could be, maybe. I don't know how old you are.
I just turned 47 last week, and so I appreciated the gift you got me, Steve.
Thank you very much. Well, sometimes the gift gets lost in the mail like other things.
That's per the government.
Gimbel, man, the jobs report today, 263,000.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. I mean, you know, the ADP private survey came out earlier this week, and it was high, and people were saying, well, it was, you know, kind of technically high, but it wouldn't be that way on Friday, and it was even bigger on Friday.
It's unbelievable. This economy is going to end up being like Michael Jordan. We think it's going to take it last forever and take it for granted. It's unbelievable.
That's sad, because that means one day it will be gone.
It will end. And I, you know, the big problem that I see when I'm talking to CEOs and heads of HR for companies is they need to hire people. They want to hire good people, and they're worried that their employees are taking it for granted. They don't realize how good they have it. That the companies are getting new clients. They can invest in new software. I mean, this has been going on now for 9 years.
So you're saying that these workers haven't experienced lean times, and so they're not going to know how to deal with it when they come?
That's exactly right. I mean, if you graduated college in 2009 or 2010, you were coming out in the beginning of this economy. And, you know, really 2010, but it's you haven't seen a downturn.
Right.
You haven't seen a slowdown.
I mean, 3.6% unemployment rate is the lowest. I think the last time it was this low was 1969.
Steve, if someone would have said this, even in 2007, 2006, that unemployment would be 3.6%, and we'd be adding 250,000 jobs 9 years after the bull market started, people would have laughed at you.
So, you know, I thought a year ago we were at full employment. When do we get to full employment?
I, You're preaching to the choir. I'm baffled the fact that unemployment dropped to 3.6. And my guess is you're going to see another really good month up at least until July, because the recent college graduates come in and they're going to fill jobs.
All right. So some of the cynics were saying, sure, there were 263,000 jobs created and people were working three of those at a time. You're out there placing people. What kind of jobs are being created? And I think wages still were low, and now they're saying that's good because of inflation. But if you're a worker, you'd like to see your check go get a little fatter.
Well, that's really the problem, is that the cost of living increases for that used to be something that was a big part of wage increasing. When you have a 3% increase year over year, that's really pretty much what you're talking about. The biggest challenge we have in this economy versus historical, being the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even into the 90s, is that the workforce hasn't necessarily gotten smarter at the average job.
Right. You explain that for me. So you're saying that the job training, or what are you saying?
No, I'm saying, so, you know, when we created, I'm going back, you know, back into the early to mid part of the 20th century, but when the assembly line was created, and then you had computers created, and you had mass production created, the workers had to get better to be able to do those jobs. Then it slowed down, and the 70s were not the best decade. And then what happened in the 90s and the 2000s, where you had people that computers and developers and coders and customer service became help desks. And the evolution, so the salaries grew because the employee base had to get smarter to grow.
Okay.
Over the past 10 years, the technology's been relatively stable, and the employee base hasn't gotten more intelligent. So when we say that America's the 31st most educated country in the world, we're feeling that with lack of wage growth.
Well, but I always thought that if there's great competition for jobs and the jobs are being created, that the wages are supposed to follow that. I mean, I've been being told that since I started doing this show.
Yeah, and that's an accurate statement. However, where the mass volume of jobs are still in the service businesses, hospitality, restaurants, coffee shops, things along those lines. And so you're getting that. So you can raise it and have I don't want to call it false wage growth due to municipalities and government enacting minimum wage increases, but that's what you have to an extent. And yes, while there's a supply and demand issue, but we also have never been in a global economy where an accountant or a lawyer or is competing against somebody in another country for the same job.
Tom Gimbel is the CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom, have a great weekend. Thanks for helping us out with these numbers today.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks very much, Dave Schwann. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, a little bit later in the program, this half hour, we're going to go to Maine, where the governor's just signed a bill that makes styrofoam illegal at a lot of restaurants, coffee shops, places like that. You know, in the grocery store, when they cut your steak and they put it on a tray, if it's a styrofoam tray and they're doing it at the grocery store, they now won't be able to do that. That will be against the law. We'll talk to a reporter from Maine about what is happening there. But right now, let's talk to someone a little bit closer to home. Christina Coyle is on the phone line, Director of U.S. Workforce Planning and Talent Attraction at McDonald's. Christina, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
I want to talk to you first about, and we're going to talk about a number of things about when it comes to summer jobs and hiring at McDonald's. But, you know, the jobs report comes out today, 263,000 new jobs created, the unemployment rate at 3.6%. The pool of workers available continues to get smaller and smaller. Have your franchisees and have you noticed, is it harder to find workers these days with so many people having jobs?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd say that, you know, flexibility in employment is increasingly more important to people when they think about a job, wanting a job that works for them. And that's where we've really, made an intentional effort to meet people where they are and provide that flexibility.
What is a typical McDonald's worker? How many hours do they work? Is it a 40-hour-a-week job?
It ranges.
Yeah.
Anywhere from a few shifts a week to a full-time 40 hours a week. I know with respect to, say, we have an education benefit that's very robust, our choice to opportunity, and it just requires 15 hours a week for a 90-day period to be eligible for $2,500 a year in tuition.
Wow.
15 hours a week. That's great.
And so we're talking about summer hiring, I guess, and I saw a statistic of 250,000 summer jobs available at McDonald's, which begs the question, is there a summer hiring season for you guys? I mean, you're manning the restaurants year-round.
Correct. So, you know, when you think we've got 14,000 restaurants in the U.S., volume and scale definitely comes into play. We are always hiring. That said, there are seasons, there's seasonality in every business, where we do see some peaks. So think about the vacations, the family road trip. Where do you stop? You stop at McDonald's for a eat, clean restrooms, friendly faces. And so we see uptick there. And you know, we are America's best first job, and we do tend to be that first summer job for many students. But that said, we want quality, engaged crew in our restaurants year-round. So these 250,000 jobs we're hiring for, if people are only, you know, an individual is only able to work for a few months, that's fine. We welcome you. If you want to stay with us for years, that's great, too.
Well, and part of the reason we're talking about it is, you know, you said you're a great first job. You also, in many cases, are a great, if not last job, next to last job, or next to next to last job as well, right? And you were working with ARP this year to reach out to more seniors?
That is correct. So, yes, we are, you know, and we're proud of that, America's best first job. But really, we're a great job for people in many respects, the different seasons of their life. And mature workers in our restaurant, that's nothing new.
Well, Christina, that's what I thought. I mean, it seems to me like 10, 15, 20 years ago, this was a thing that older Americans were getting part-time jobs, whether it was for income, for society, or whatever, that, you know, that was a place where older Americans were going to work.
Yes, no, absolutely. And I think we've seen over the recent years, retirement is being redefined. And the baby boomers, you know, they've been a disruptive generation to move the country forward. I think that we're seeing also baby boomers, as they enter into retirement years, changing up what that looks like. You know, around the AARP partnership, they are truly experts in this space. And we wanted to be intentional about how we can serve our communities and partner and learn. This is the first time that there are five generations in the workforce together. And I think often, you know, McDonald's, we're very much our restaurants a microcosm of the larger community that we serve. So we're thrilled to be intentional about having those five generations
well,
come about.
You know, one way to attract seniors, I think I know a lot of seniors who meet at McDonald's for coffee in the morning. Do the seniors who work for you get a discount on the morning coffee with the coffee clutch there?
You know, some of that might vary location to location, but you're right. We actually have shared with our restaurant managers and the franchise owners, go talk to your regulars. Say, hey, you're here. Let's go talk about this.
Right.
Come to your friends. Fill up their coffee. And, no, you're absolutely right. And McDonald's is that community meeting place.
Has the hiring changed, and I know it just happened recently, but McDonald's changed its sort of approach to the minimum wage, saying it wouldn't use its resources to oppose minimum wage increases the way it has in the past. Has that made hiring easier, or has it not been had much of an impact as of yet?
I don't really know that there's been an impact as of yet. You know, you're right, the wage discussion is an important one. And at McDonald's, we made the decision we're not going to fight it. We're very committed to being active in that discussion. And what's interesting, you know, we own approximately 5% of the locations as a corporation.
Right.
And then the franchisees represent the 95%. For our corporate-owned restaurants, we pay in excess of $10 an hour. And typically, you know, franchisees, they're running their own businesses, but typically their practices don't differ that widely in some of these respects. And I think that, you know, with respect to looking at, you know, an employment opportunity, wage is certainly a piece. There's also that benefits component. And, you know, our trace to opportunity, that really becomes a differentiator in the retail and the QSR space. And I think that you know, as you were talking about before, that larger sense of community, be it 15 hours a week or 40 hours a week, who we work with and where we work is so much a part of our life and our identity. And I think that, you know, when you've got a great place to work and you offer flexibility and offer opportunity for advancement, those can be differentiators too.
Christina Coyle is the Director of U.S. Workforce Planning and Talent Attraction at McDonald's. Christina, it was nice to talk to you today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Take care.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Here's your PSA for the day. Staying up to date in the business world is vital, otherwise you might lose your job. Temple Steel is a manufacturer on the north side and has nearly 2,000 employees globally. And what the company is clearly focused on is keeping up with the changing times and making moves in the industry. And that's exactly why the most recent CEO got laid off. The company stated that they're looking for someone with a technical background and can better leverage the other markets. So out with the old, in with the new. Clifford Nass is filling that role, and the startup Truck Park is filling a new role to help, you guessed it, truck drivers. Those big old trailers have to go somewhere, and logistics are already an integral part of that industry already. Through their app, the spots can be reserved before the end of a trip or on demand, and this will help 3.5 million professional drivers that have to use only 400,000 truck park spots. I'm not a math professor, but those numbers don't add up. But I am Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Ori and Samuelson. It's 12:53. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, a story out of Maine caught my eye this week. The governor is signing a bill that bans styrofoam food containers for most restaurants, most places. One of the people who has been writing about that is Kevin Miller, who is a staff writer at the Portland Press Herald, and he covers politics in Maine. Joins us on a phone line now. Kevin, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
Lunch is appropriate, right? Because a lot of people are eating out of styrofoam right about now. And in Maine, well, it doesn't take effect till 2021, right?
Right, till January 1st, 2021.
So they've got some time, but in 2021, that styrofoam will be banned there. Tell me about who can use styrofoam and who can't.
Well, you know, as of once it takes effect in 2021, it'll cover all restaurants, coffee houses, food trucks, you know, food pantries, grocery stores, pretty much you name it. They'll be required to stop using foam, which is commonly called styrofoam, also known as polystyrene. It's any of that, you know, kind of the blown up foam stuff that you get in coffee cups. So, you know, around here, there's lots of Dunkin' Donuts here in New England, so they'll have to stop using them. You know, fast food places will have to stop using it. Interestingly, though, some of the organizations that will be exempt are hospitals, seafood shippers. You know, right. Maine, we have a lot of lobsters here, and a lot of our lobster dealers ship out lobsters across the country in styrofoam. And they'll still be able to use styrofoam.
Well, I guess that was my question then. So it's not just restaurants, right? If the lobster fishermen are able to use styrofoam, are there other commercial entities that are going to have to stop using styrofoam, aside from the food industry?
Yeah, so it's pretty much everybody has to stop using it in the restaurant and the retail sector, except for, like I said, hospitals and seafood shippers. And then also, organizations like Meals on Wheels, they would still be allowed to use it. There is one other kind of a carve-out for, you know, grocery stores. So say you buy, you know, chicken from a big national chain, you know, national producer like Purdue, that already comes wrapped in styrofoam, so that's allowed. They're not going to have to, you know, take the chicken out of the packaging and repackage it. That's still allowed, but they wouldn't be able to package anything new in styrofoam.
And so what's the alternative? What are they suggesting? I saw one lawmaker said, look, we grow a lot of timber here. Why don't we do wood-based products or things like that? Do you know what these restaurants, and I should also say that this is a case where the state is following a lot of local communities, right? Freeport and others have had bans like this in place for quite a long time. So in those areas, what do the restaurants use instead?
A lot of them use, you know, just paper packaging. There are certainly work on other kinds of packaging, you know, wood-based. That would be really popular up here because we have such a big forestry industry in Maine. But those seem like they're probably a little bit further in the future for development. But a lot of the companies use paper packaging or use plastic. If you buy something at a grocery store in, say, Freeport or Portland, which is the state's largest city, they wrap that up in paper or plastic.
And Maine now will be the first state to do this. How contentious was the fight?
It actually wasn't that contentious,
yeah,
interestingly enough. I think, you know, it's because we've seen more and more communities moving towards this. You know, we've probably about a half dozen communities, but some of the larger towns have done this. So, it hasn't caused major disruptions. I mean, certainly it's probably increased costs for some businesses, and there were a lot of business organizations that were opposed to it for that reason, but it didn't cause major disruptions. It's not like you can't buy a coffee in Portland anymore, or you can't go to the grocery store and buy something.
Kevin Miller writes, sorry, Kevin, I'm going to run. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but Kevin Miller writes for the Portland Press Herald. All right, we'll come by 2021 and not eat lunch off styrofoam together.
Great. Thank you very much for having me.